bliss comes from this oneness, a bliss, a happiness that has no counterpart of sorrow. All other pleasures in the world, we can see that has a counterpart of sorrow to it. As the Lord Buddha says, that wherever there is joining, there is disjoining. Wherever there is coming together, there is again separation. He asks very beautiful question, very profound indeed, that Ananda, tell me, is the waters of the seven seas is more, or the tears that the beloved have shed when they have to get separated are more? And he says, Ananda, verily, the water of those tears is more. We can see that, that how much weeping and wailing comes when there is this separation of the loving people. That they come together in love, feeling that, well, they will never have to be separated. But they come, that contradictions are right involved in that coming together. The two, as long as there is that two, the seed of separation is also there. And therefore, the separation has to follow. And thus, one gets this jolt of suffering as well. So, we see that the solution for all this is that understanding of actual oneness. Wherever we feel that oneness, there is not the awareness of separation. I often give the analogy of our body, because we have that feeling of oneness with the body, the identification with body. So, wherever we go, you may get separated from the spouse or from children or from friends, and that is understandable. Do you get separated from body? Not until you die. The body is always with us. We don't feel it as, in fact, a separate entity. We speak whenever the body goes somewhere, we say, I go there. I am going to California. I am going to London. I am going to India. The body travels, but because of our identification with the body, we say, I go there. It is that because of that oneness, there is no separation. Now think, when we actually get that oneness with the whole universe, there is no separation, and therefore there is no sufferings that come due to separation. Otherwise, there is no getting rid of the fear of separation. One gentleman was telling me, that, well, I always have this fear that what if I get separated from my wife or my children? Oh, it will give me such terrible jolt, I will die. I will not be able to withstand if something happens to my children or to my wife. I am so emotionally caught in it, that I will just not exist because without that. So, let alone this actual separation, the fear of separation also makes one feel so sad and suffering. So, the solution is to get to the root of it, to feel that underlying ever-existent oneness, and then to experience it actually. And that was the main theme also in the 13th chapter that we were studying till last Friday, that it is one being, and that is the seer in everything, that is the perceiver. There are no two there. The I here and I here in that body or whatever, they are not different at all. A knowledge that needs to be emphasized, because we have been habituated, maybe for lives and lives together, for how many lives we don't know, in accepting this idea that each one of us is a completely separate being, and all our actions are really based on that. Let me become rich. Doesn't matter if my brother there is poor. Well, he and I are different. Let him take care of himself. If I am good, I may help him a little bit, but that's about it. It is, after all, he has to take care of himself. I will have to take care of myself. If I do good deeds, the good results will accrue me. Those good results will accrue not to him, but to me. If that other person does good deed, the good karma, good results will accrue to that person. And so our life is so much dependent on this division. We get so many issues in day-to-day life because of this tremendous feeling, in fact the awareness of distinction, that yes, I wrote that paper, somebody else took the credit for it. It is, and then not only my credit for the paper goes away, and that is gone, I may get it, may not get it back, but not only I lose that, I lose peace of my mind also, constantly worrying and thinking about it. It is, somebody was asking the other day that why that if something bad happens, then why should we just let it go and be happy? It is, I told that, look, that somebody took away something of mine. And does it mean that I should let that person steal my smile also? Mm-hmm. At least let me keep that with me. Let me preserve that with me. Why should I let that thief steal away the peace of my mind also? That person stole something. But does it mean that I should let the other things also be stolen like the peace of my mind? It is the life being so dependent on these distinctions, that this is mine, that is yours. And we feel responsible for our actions, we don't feel responsible for the actions of somebody else. If somebody is told that it is that why did you do this mistake, if the person hasn't done it, say, I didn't do it, don't tell that other fellow. In our language, you know, in Indian culture, the joint families, it is considered not a good thing to scold your daughter-in-law publicly, or because she is daughter-in-law, and then the mother-in-law gets into bad book, doesn't treat the daughter-in-law well, and so forth. And so when the daughter-in-law has made some mistake, then how it is to be pointed out to her? Then She starts scolding very bitterly to her own daughter. But with the idea that let the daughter-in-law hear it. So what happens is that the daughter didn't do it anyway, so she doesn't feel much offense. Oh, mom, I didn't do it. Oh, you didn't do it. Okay, then I better keep quiet. But all this she says so loudly that the daughter-in-law gets to hear it. So she gets then the message. So I am responsible for my actions. I am not responsible for somebody else's actions. This duality of beings is the basis of all our actions, our activities, our understanding. And in fact, even if we understand the idea of oneness, then still the counter questions start coming up. Then why should I perform spiritual practice if all are one? Then some saintly people anyway, they are performing spiritual practice. I don't have to take the trouble of it. By their performance, it will be with me also, since we are all one. Sri Ramakrishna did so much of sadhana, so much of spiritual practice. So why should I now do? After all, we are one, is it not? Such questions crop up if you take stand on oneness. So all these were answered by Lord in the 13th chapter, that how the illusory distinctions are felt and how one should strive to get to that underlying oneness. And when this oneness actually is experienced, then those questions have no place at all. They get automatically answered. Now the 14th chapter that we are going to begin, there the same topic continues in details. Details are important. How to do it? It is, we say all this is all one, and this bondage of duality is to be removed. But how are we bound? What actually creates this attractions and repulsions? What creates that tremendous attachment and bondage? How we are attracted to certain things and repelled from certain other things, and how these things keep on shifting all the time. Not that I am always attracted at an object. That object attracts me at one point, repels me at another point. When I am very hungry, food attracts me. When I am full, then I am not attracted by food. So similarly, it is with all different things. So we need to know what this binds us. The details are important. If we actually want to do something, then the details are not to be overlooked. If we don't have the details, we get stuck. It is, yes, you have to go to that place in Ohio to get something. Okay, how to get there? What is the address? What vehicle goes there? Can I fly there? Where is the nearest airport? What are the arrangements for lodging and all that? All those details become necessary if we actually want to take up the journey. If we don't want to take it up, then of course the details are not necessary. But for the practical spiritual aspirant, which is the focus of Bhagavad Gita, friends, Bhagavad Gita is not meant for those who only intellectually want to understand things. Bhagavad Gita is for practitioners, for those who are spiritual aspirants, who really want to illumine their lives by assimilating this knowledge. For them, as this message of Bhagavad Gita is. And therefore, we have been seeing this always, that the practical component is very, very important there, and so the details become very important. Now, the details require paying more attention to. The principle is told maybe in a very crisp one line or two lines and is easily understandable. But then the details, they need more study, more attention needs to be paid. It is very easy to say that, well, you learn that computer language, C++ or whatever, that is to be learned, okay. Now, this principle can be told in one line. Our Ritu was told, hey, you have to take up the work of managing archive of Vedanta Society. She said yes. Now she has to do it, but then she requires details. Saying yes took one second maybe, or just nodding the head. But now when she has to actually do it, what Ritu? You need details, you need to know how to do it, you need to work, you need to get connected to different people. It takes more attention, more time. And so this 14th chapter is full of certain details. These details are important for practical implementation of the principles that have been told in the 13th chapter. The 13th chapter categorically says that it is the one Lord who is pervading all different bodies, and seeing this oneness brings total illumination and fulfillment to life. There is nothing superior to this. And so it has been told and emphasized in quite a few verses of 13th chapter. Now 14th chapter, Arjuna is not again asking any question, at least explicitly. Implicitly, he is probably desirous of knowing now the details, and Lord supplies the details that what I have told you. Now, let me give you the details. Let me give you the procedure. The principle is told, the procedure has to be told to make that principle functional, applicable in one's life. So, Shri Bhagavan Vacha Chaturdashodhyayah Gunatraya Vibhaga Yoga. That this is the chapter called Gunatraya Vibhaga Yoga. A rather technical name, we will come to it a little later. But let us move forward with what Lord is going to say. Param bhuya pravakshami jnananam jnanam uttamam yajnatva munaya sarve param siddhimito gatah. I shall tell you again the supreme knowledge, the best of all knowledges, knowing which all the sages have attained supreme felicity from hence. That this knowledge is, how is this? I am going to tell it to you. Param bhuyaha means, again I am going to tell you. I have told you earlier, but now the details are to follow. In that sense, there is a repetition, but not repetition. These scriptures, they repeat, but not the same thing again, actually. The details of it or depth of it at a different level, it is told. So, Param Bhuyaha, that the supreme knowledge, Param Jnananam Jnanam Uttamam, that the supreme knowledge I am giving you again. And what happens when you know this? When all the sages, when they know this, they attain the supreme felicity, the supreme attainment of life comes with that knowledge. Like you go to a university to get some degree. What do you get by that? If you get that degree, then what accrues? Then we will say, well, I know this, I learned this, I will be able to make my living in life better, in the world better, if I get all this. Now what happens if you get this knowledge? Param Siddhi Mito Gataha. You get the highest ever achievement in this world. The best achievement in this world, if you get this knowledge, do all get? Somebody was telling me the other day that is getting graduated from Brown, undergraduate is going to be finished. So what grad course, are you going for grad course? And that person said, yes, I want to become such and such person. I want to study this, because if I study this, I will be able to get this. I asked, do all that they get this degree, get all that job? No, all don't get. Some get. Some do not get. Some have to find out something different. But they all do not get it. Some get. Like you may become MBA. Does it make you automatically millionaire if you become MBA? Some become, some don't become. Some become millionaires or billionaires even without doing MBA. So MBA and becoming millionaire cannot be directly connected. So if you get this knowledge, you get the highest thing in life, do all get? Does it, or some who get this highest knowledge will get this highest achievement in life, some will not get? So Lord, to remove this confusion, survey everyone. Each one of those who get this knowledge will get the highest achievement in life, because it is synonymous with it. It is not that you get say a degree, that I now become an MD. Now I have to start looking for opportunities, looking for jobs, I look for different openings. If I don't get in Providence, I go somewhere else. And so it depends, it requires further looking. Just by getting the degree is not what you are going to do in life, doesn't automatically determine by that. So there is a gap between your knowledge and the achievement that will accrue from it. But here the knowledge itself is that achievement. It takes you automatically to the highest level of achievement in life by the very virtue of that knowledge. This is the tremendous efficacy of this knowledge, friends. Tremendous. Just know this and you have the highest achievement. It is, in that sense, this is a very special knowledge. We have seen this in some other verses as well, that if you know this, knower of Brahman becomes Brahman, as Mundak Upanishad presents it, that if you know Brahman, you become Brahman. If you know math, you don't become math. If you learn carpentry, you do not become carpentry. It is, but knowing Brahman, you become Brahman. How? Because that is the nature of that knowledge. You actually are Brahman, the all-pervading absolute. But think that I am such and such little person. And so, to get rid of this ignorance means you know that you are Brahman, and thus you become Brahman. So this is the highest achievement that accrues from this knowledge. Why Lord is telling this? That so that the mind gets tuned to it. If you are told that you won't get anything by this knowledge, then you don't have that much interest in studying it. But if you learn something, if you do it, our Professor Dorothy says, okay, to her students, if you do it right, and you will get this many credits. If you come for this, then you will get one credit or two credit or whatever. Because that sense of getting something out of it is in our mind. And so, it is told, okay, if you know this, you will get this. And thus, there is an interest. If it is told that you won't get anything, there is some courses at schools, like at Brown, there is they ran a nice course, but it was non-credit. So, being non-credit, very few went for that course. Only those who thought that it is quite interesting, they decided to go for it, and that too just very little involvement, because it is non-credit. If the credit is associated with it, then many would have joined and also would have paid lot of attention there. But keeping this in mind, Lord says that there is tremendous credit, you know. If you know this, you will get the highest achievement in life just by knowing it. Afterwards, you don't have to send an application or seek an opportunity. That knowing itself is the highest credit in life. And he says that so many have already done it. Not that I am telling you something completely new, because that is again a question that has anybody done it before? Before taking up a very laborious, difficult assignment, just by a promise that, oh, you will get this, doesn't fully satisfy us. We have the question, let me see if anybody has already got it or not. One friend of mine, before buying anything, of course those ads, they are full of praise for that product, that this can do this and this can do that, doesn't rely just on what it says. Sees, are there any reviews of the users? Users' reviews, whether what is advertised is actually there or not. So, the reviews by the users, they are very important. Of course, since the manufacturing companies now, they know this, they themselves put lot of reviews there, that we never had such a product before and so forth. Just amazing, more than what the price you pay and so much, so forth. So, but the idea is it just an empty promise, or are there actually people who have done it? Lord says, next verse, idam jnanam upashritya mama sadharmyam agataḥ sarge pino pajayante pralaye navyathanti cha. That there are people like that, that who after having gotten this knowledge, as a result of this knowledge, they have now mama sadharma magataha. By resorting to this knowledge, they, having attained my nature, are not reborn even at the time of creation, nor are they distressed at the time of dissolution. And that people, when they, through this knowledge, they get the mama sadharmyam, means become identical, they come to the position of the divine. Now, this dissolution or at the time of creation can be taken, you know, in a very ordinary sense or in a very profound sense. It is applicable to both, that at the time of the creation, say Big Bang, they don't feel anything and they don't get created because they are existence itself. This relative creation and destruction doesn't affect them. This whole universe may get destroyed and nothing happens to them because they are existence itself. A big wave arises. Now the ocean doesn't get affected by it, and that wave gets dissolved, again the ocean doesn't get affected by it. So coming to that state, many have got this unflinching steadfastness in life, to be merged in reality, in that serene bliss of the truth. Now the details will be told, and these details have quite a few technicalities involved. These details are told in context of explaining to a human being. In human beings, how the birth takes place, how the creation springs up, that analogy is being taken here. Because what we do not know has to be taught in context of what we already know. The teacher has to elevate the student from what the student already knows to what the student doesn't know. So the analogy has to be about something that the student knows already. Otherwise that analogy will be useless. And then that analogy has to be stretched or connected to what that person needs to know. So that is how the teaching is imparted. So here the analogy of how the creation takes place in this world, that is being given. Mama yo nirmahat brahma tasmin garbham tadhamyaham sambhavas sarvabhutanam tato bhavati bharata. The great nature is my womb. In that I place the germ. And from that, O descendant of Bharata, is the origin of all beings. That is how we see things getting born here, that there is ovum, and then the sperm, and then that combination gives rise to things. So here also he says that, look, this division that you feel, that I and the world, now that interaction multiplies it. That mama yo nirmahat brahma, the great nature, that is mahat brahma. It is the technical word mahat, means the great or the totality of nature or matter, that this matter includes what we call feelings, what we call thoughts. It is nothing but matter at the subtle level. So matter at the gross level and subtle level, both is included in this word big nature. And then the consciousness puts a seed into it. And thus everything in the world is created. Everything, therefore, just as every being here is a combination of the mother part and the father part, the nature part and the seed part. And it is like you sow the seed in the ground. Now this thing starts growing and the seed splits, then you have the shoots coming up, then you see the plant coming up, you see the branches and the leaves and the flowers and the fruits and so forth. Now what is provided there by the nature and what is provided by the seed? Very interesting thing, friends, that what is provided by the nature there is the that soil is provided, all the minerals and the matter that is provided by the soil, the water, the air and the sunlight and so forth. All that is making the plant grow. But is that enough? How should it grow? How should it get connected? How at various stages what should be provided? There has to be a plan for it. That plan is provided by the seed. That seed contains all the programming, and that programming just manifests taking the matter from the nature according to the program, according to availability. So both should be there. The matter should be available and there should be the program to keep the matter in right place at right time. So arranging the matter is done according to the program, and the matter has to be available for this. So the two things combine there. If you have the seed which has all the program, if you have it in your pocket, the program is there, but you will not have the plant or the leaves, branches, fruits and all that, because there is no material for it to build on. So the program is there, but it doesn't manifest. But now, if you have only the matter and not the program, one story we had in our childhood about a forgetful boy. That boy used to forget always. And then he was always told, hey, remember, you know, you sometimes he would forget the school book and go to school, and then or go on a wrong day. So he went right on time on school one day and thought that, wow, it's really on time, and was waiting and waiting for the kids, other kids to come, and nobody was showing up. Then it was realized that it was Sunday, so he went to school very early, but forgot that it is Sunday, there is no school today. So a very forgetful kid. So this forgetful kid, all where kids were given a small plot in the school, 2 yards by 2 yards piece of land to cultivate some these vegetables and flowers there, and then they were going to be examined that how much they can get out of it. And his boy was really made the soil. They were taught how the soil is to be tilled and how you have to put what manure to be put, the fertilizer to be put, and so forth. And he started doing all with meticulous care. And after doing it for weeks and weeks, and the other students, they were getting the plants coming up very nicely, they were happy. This boy was worried that, well, he is taking all these pains. Every day he is pouring the water, he is giving manure and all that. Then it struck him that he had not put the seed. Forgot to put the seed, so that how things will come up. So both these things are necessary. What is the seed in the creation here? That seed of consciousness, that the seed by which you know this is this, this is this, that everything is there because it is known. It's you are conscious of it. So that consciousness is the seed. That consciousness automatically, you know, gives it its badness, its nature. But then the matter is needed in accordance with that. So the matter and the consciousness, these are together. Now this process is being shown that to emphasize that all creation that you see had this seed of one awareness, one consciousness, and the multiplicity that you see is because of this combination with matter. So it will continue that you see, so that descendant of Bharata is the origin of all beings. All beings come out with that. And in the next verse he says that everything is only the combination of these two. Sarva yonishu kaunteya murtayah sambhavantiyah tasam brahma mahadyoni aham bija pradhapita. Whatever forms, O son of Kunti, are born in different wombs, of them the great nature is the womb, and I am the seed-giving father. It is whatever creation that we see, all of them have sprang up from this great womb of nature. And who has given the seed for it? God has given the seed of it. Here, friends, the analogy is to be just understood, not don't stretch it too far at the gender level, and that it is not that the human genders are involved here. It is just for the sake of analogy that it is shown that the Lord is the conscious principle and the nature is the inert principle. That gets modeled according to the consciousness. It is not as such man or woman. Woman also is the same thing here. It is combination of matter and consciousness. So also is man. Now, next verse says that now it has three qualities or three ways of functioning, three ways of manifestation. And so the bondage becomes now multiple. The expression becomes multiple through these three gunas. That is a Sanskrit word, guna. Difficult to actually convey the idea, but It is, we have tried it before. If we pay more attention, it is gradually we can understand it. Sattvam rajas tamaiti guna prakriti sambhavaha nibadnanti mahabaho dehe dehi namavyayam. Sattva, rajas and tamas, these gunas, O mighty arm one, that are born of nature, prakriti, bind fast the immutable, embodied being in this body. These sattva, raja, tama, iti guna, they will be described in the coming verses. To just briefly tell is this, that the tendency of action, getting drawn to action, when there is something that we like or dislike, an action corresponding to that ensues. Then there is this steadfastness and calmness, and you don't get those pulls acting on you, that state of calmness that is there. And then there is this state of being inert, being inactive, being lazy, callous. Not that there is no action, you are attracted, but that attraction is not put into an activity because of some inhibitions. So that principle is also in us. All these three, they expand, extend this world and have their corresponding bondages functioning in our life. So, a very interesting subject, and this is the treatment that is unparalleled, really. The way it has been described in this 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is unique. It is very succinct, and yet all the details have been very beautifully, logically, rationally presented, showing how we get bound, entangled by all these different forms that come to us. Each has its own way of binding, and therefore we need to know it. If we want to become free, we need to know the nature of bondage as well and how we get bound. So therefore that will be described in details, and yet it will be quite succinctly presented. It is brief and yet unambiguous and sufficient for us to assimilate and do the needful. So we shall continue this study in coming Fridays. Any questions? One is coming from up there. Yeah. Okay, please.
You mentioned about the creation at the creation level, and the relation between creation and the silence between resolution.
Yeah.
It means two ways. One is at the cosmological level.
Yes.
The other one is the profound level, which describes what is meant by profound.
It is profound. Cosmological and profound level. The cosmological is profound level. And then the relative level that we see, that somebody is just a son is born to somebody, that is a relative level of creation. The whole universe is born is a deeper and cosmic phenomena, of which this is a minor phenomena. At the individual level, again, this child is born, but then a tooth came to the child, a tooth started coming. So that is again a creation. that to that created baby the tooth got created further, and then that tooth decays, the tooth fell. Not that the boy died because of that, but only the tooth died. So this is the relative smaller and smaller, more and more dependent creations and dissolutions. They all form the part of the cosmic big creation.
If at that level there is no individual access to undergo the dilation or diffusion?
There is. We do not know that in that is the primary individual, the cosmic level. Cosmic individual is that where there is just knowledge, I am, separate from the word. That I am is therefore the source of that creation, that I am. That amness gets that specification, and thus that specification is the first level of creation. That is therefore called Mahat. It is great, it is big, everything is created in that. At that individual level also we can see it by referring to our memory of dream, that the whole universe in the dream, all of you see the dream. Now, you that is seen in the dream and the whole universe, you riding a unicorn. I give that example because that although is not seen in this world, in the dream it's quite possible that you ride a unicorn. So you are there, unicorn is there, and all those land and the skies and the people and the animals and the plants and all that you see there, the stars, the planets, in the dream also there will be these galaxies and the maybe black holes and whatever in the all that is the creation. Where did it happen? In that individual who is sleeping, that individual's creation. So that in that individual dreaming has this again divisions of I and the world. Now in that dream again somebody can be dreaming. Now there another creation comes. So that is how this creation, imagine, think of the dreamer of this creation. It is that, that the Mahat. Yes, John?
I was kind of interested in what you said about seed planted. It's almost like, I feel like before I was born, I knew the difference between right and wrong.
Yeah.
And whatever good that I learned from my parents or from school, I wouldn't say I learned from them, I'm relearning from them. And, but I have to keep relearning because there's something else that takes me away from perfection. I wouldn't say just one something.
It is really one something.
Okay. Mm. In many forms.
It is, yes, but I like this observation of yours that the sense of right and wrong was with you. It was not put in by anyone. It was not put in by your body. It was with you prior to your taking birth in this body. Now that sense is just a standard, a criterion by which to judge. But that learning to use that sense takes lot of time, a lot of experience, lot of mistakes happen on the way. That the principle you know what is right and what is not right. But when they present you to you, there is the confusion sets in. Whether this is right or not right. And then you may choose something as right. And then later it may turn out to be a bad choice. It was wrong. It was a wrong choice. But now it is not really completely wrong, because that is how you learn that it is wrong. So, it goes on evolving. Second thing is that although, and that is more important in spiritual life, although the sense of right and wrong is there, to keep it predominant in our actions is also not very easy. That needs to be learned, because there is the other sense of like and dislike, and that overpowers the sense of right and wrong. Something could be right. Like today, I knew it was really right for me to do some pending work and finish it. But I lied down on the bed, and I continued lying down. Although it was wrong, it was pleasant, you know. I knew it was wrong to do it, but I did not exercise my sense of rights strongly enough there, that I should have done it. Now I know that I should have done it, but I didn't do it. So that is something that we need to cultivate by assiduous efforts, that if something is right, I must do it. Then again, of course, the secondary learning, that what you thought as right did not always prove to be exactly right. So that is another education that we get. Very good question. Yes, Charles?
Animals and plants and rocks don't have a sense of right and wrong, so we don't always have it, do we? Throughout our former...
That is a good observation again. Therefore, it is said that until you develop this sense of right and wrong, that is a special feature of human program, that they have been provided, and this is a very powerful tool included in the human kit, that sense of right and wrong, which the animal bodies have not been provided with. And so, they only exhaust their karma. It is therefore said that their life is instinctive, based on like and dislike. And therefore, they do not incur any bad karma or good karma.
But gods and demigods have a sense of right and wrong.
No, many of them don't have. Of course, again, when we say this, one caveat has to be put there, that this is a human understanding. Maybe the sand also has the sense of right and wrong, but I do not have this knowledge of it, that's all. So let us conclude with the closing prayers. One announcement from tomorrow. We are restarting the meditation sessions at 11 a.m., the guided meditation session at 11 a.m. And before that, the volunteers could come to do some cleaning or other works, helping works from 8 to 10. Whosoever can, they can come. Or they can come according to their times. The meditation and the prayers that will follow will start at 11, will conclude at 12, and then whosoever is there, we can join in a little lunch after that.
गीता सुगीता कर्तव्या किमन्यत् शास्त्रविस्तरैः या स्वयं पद्मनाभस्य मुखपद्माद्विनिःसृता ekam shastram devaki putra gitam eko devo devaki putra eva eko mantraha tasya namani ani karmapyekam tasya devasya seva Shri Krishna Arpanamastu.